Welcome to the Bulwark Podcast. I'm Charlie Sykes. Rather remarkable Monday after the Mueller report sort of released, actually not released at all, just a four-page summary. And to break this all down, law professor Kim Whaley joins me, and I appreciate it very much.
Happy to be here.
All right, so let's talk about it. I mean, obviously, the headline is no collusion, but no exoneration. The president claiming absolute exoneration. This is a good time to remind people that the lack of an indictment is not a declaration of innocence.
Yeah, it's not a declaration of no wrongdoing. There's a very high standard of proof before government can put somebody in jail to take their liberty away, and that's beyond a reasonable doubt. And prosecutors are acutely aware that if they haven't gathered the evidence, they cannot indict and convict. So they move on, even if there are some problems with a particular person's actions. And I think, given that we know there were over 100 contacts between the campaign and the Russians, that is something I think the American people still should keep in mind, even if those contacts, I think, definitively did not rise to the level of conspiracy or coordination as a matter of a counterintelligence investigation. Of course, we use the word collusion in the dictionary. That sort of is like conspiracy, the idea of an agreement, a meeting of the minds to defraud the United States. That didn't happen. And I think that's good news for America, frankly.
You know, I was talking with somebody about this a little bit earlier that, you know, when I first saw somebody tweet out, you know, this is really, you know, the best case scenario for America. I wasn't sure, but the more I think about it, you know, it is, in the sense that imagine the alternative that we found out that the sitting president of the United States had engaged in a conspiracy with a foreign power to subvert democracy. And then imagine the scenario that would play out where Republicans in MAGA land would rally around and defend him. Ultimately, Congress would not impeach him and remove him from office. So the precedent set would be so ugly for us. So at least we can move past this. But I want to narrow in on the obstruction of justice issue, because there's rather an extraordinary line in the letter. One of the few places where the attorney general quotes Mueller is when he specifically says that he does not exonerate the president from charges of obstructing justice. So talk to me, first of all, about why you think Bob Mueller would have said, you know, after all of this, would have not made a recommendation on prosecution. Rather unusual step on his part.
Sure. Well, it's unusual for a prosecutor not to either have a thumbs up or thumbs down. I mean, they, as I mentioned, they churn through different cases. They can't prosecute everyone. They understand that certain bad guys go free, and that's just what they do. So that is unusual. There's, given that we're talking about the President of the United States, there are a lot of constitutional implications here that I think were probably weighing on him in terms of making a determination as to whether to move forward one way or the other. I think what's important is to keep in mind that this really is a political judgment. And Mr. Barr could have said, listen, I'm just going to let the chips fall politically in Congress where they may, release the report, this kind of equivocal decision that there's no exoneration, there's no obstruction, and then let the legislative branch take the baton. It's somewhat unusual that he stepped in and made a decision where Mueller could not.
Well, and in this sense, again, underlining that the decision not to prosecute was not made by Bob Mueller. It was made by Donald Trump appointees, Rod Rosenstein and William Barr. And the reasons they did it, you know, and I want to get into their decision to do it. They basically argue that because there was no underlying crime, you couldn't commit obstruction of justice. Let's take that part. Is that the standard, that if you can't prove the underlying crime, that if you have tried to obstruct justice or you have interfered with witnesses, then that's no harm, no foul?
No, that is not the standard. The standard is, you know, knowing interference with an ongoing investigation. And if you carefully read the letter, lawyerly letter, it says that the fact there was no underlying crime bears on intent. Mm-hmm. They say, listen, Mr. Trump, if he didn't conspire with Russia, then he couldn't have cared enough to actually have impeded the Mueller investigation. That's not a requirement for obstruction. There are plenty of published cases where people are prosecuted and convicted for just tampering with the investigative process, even if there's not a separate crime. So that is not a requirement. And of course, we don't want a criminal justice system where people can get away with just interfering, even if they don't commit some other crime. It makes sense that that would be illegal in and of itself.
Well, we probably should stay away from speculation, but I'm going to do it here anyway. The fact that the logic there is, well, he must have known that there was no crime, therefore he couldn't have had corrupt intent. On the other hand, knowing what we know about the misfit toys of the Trump campaign, if you're Donald Trump, you may not know all the things that might have happened out there, all the conversations that might have taken place in this sort of ragtag campaign. So I'm not even sure it logically works that the lack of the establishment of this wouldn't mean that he was worried that there might be information out there that might have been incriminating.
Yeah, and the corrupt intent is actually kind of a wonky concept. There's a lot of theories on what that means, but let me read from the letter itself. It says, in our judgment, the report identifies no actions that constitute obstructive conduct, had a nexus to a pending proceeding. We know there were pending mm-hmm. proceedings, right? There's congressional proceedings. Of course, there was the Mueller investigation, and Trump himself was extremely verbal and vocal about not liking that process. And we're done with corrupt intent, each of which has to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. It's unclear which piece of that they say is not proven, but it suggests they're saying the intent itself, they can't prove that because he might have had some other reason for firing Comey, for example, which is legal as a matter of the Constitution, for, you know, basically going on the attack with this investigation. It might not have been because he was covering up from some other crime, but that's not necessarily the test. That's a prosecutorial judgment for sure. It's legitimately within the scope of a prosecutor to say, I don't want to but go forward with that particular charge. But this is different in that I think there's an argument to be made that they could have left that determination for the political process.
Well, also, I thought it was interesting that they used the phrase, many of which took place in public view, basically saying, look, if he was doing it on Twitter or he was doing it in public statements. And this was, of course, one of the things that I was struck by, that it did feel that his attempts to obstruct, to the extent there was obstruction, was taking place in broad daylight, in real time that we actually saw it.
It's unprecedented, but, sure.
Well, and Bill Barr, I mean, let's go back to this. I mean, he is Donald Trump's handpicked attorney general. And one of the things that he did to get the job, apparently, or you could speculate about that, is he writes a 19-page memo last year specifically criticizing Mueller for pursuing what he said was a fatally misconceived legal theory related to obstruction of justice. So he didn't come into this without having very clear ideas of what, you know, what standards the president should be held to in the obstruction of justice. So isn't that kind of a conflict? Number two, Rod Rosenstein is the guy that wrote the memo justifying the firing of FBI Director Comey, which clearly would have been an element, right, in the obstruction of justice. So we're not dealing with non-biased, non-conflicted actors here.
Yeah, I think they're both highly respected, professionals. But when you think about structurally what we're talking about the president's own lawyers, people that literally answer to him within the chain of command, making determinations about his own accountability. It would be like my being arrested and brought to court and my own lawyer gets to decide whether the charges against me go forward or get dismissed. So I think there's an argument that under our separation of powers, each branch checks the other two branches, that a determination like this should either be made by Congress or it should be made by the courts. So, and that would have had to be teed up. But that's the whole theory behind not indicting a sitting president, is that there's some political element to it that really shouldn't be resolved by the courts. So I would say it shouldn't be resolved by people within the president's chain of command either. There's nothing illegal about what they did, but it is, I think, troubling from a structural standpoint.
What about the speed with which the attorney general made the decision? The report was handed into him on Friday. By Sunday, he had made a determination that there was no obstruction of justice. A lot of criticism about the haste with which you made that decision.
Well, it was recently reported, CNN reported, I think, earlier today, that there was a conversation 3 weeks ago with Mr. Mueller around the challenges he was having in making this decision. But in the letter, it says they issued more than 2,800 subpoenas, 500 search warrants, 230 orders for communication records, issued almost 50 orders authorizing pen registers, on and on, 500 witnesses. That's a lot of material to go over thoroughly to make a decision of that magnitude. Now, what we don't know is how much Rod Rosenstein, who I know and I've worked with, I have tremendous respect for him, how much he brought to the table and said, listen, I've gone over that myself, and I can tell you that this is my determination. We just don't know. And I think what we'll probably see are some of these people being brought to Congress to answer these very questions.
Now, you mentioned before one of the keys to obstruction of justice charges is this concept of corrupt intent, which is my understanding is one of the reasons why you would want to interview or interrogate the person who is the subject of the investigation. Did Bob Mueller make a mistake by not having an in-person interview with Donald Trump?
You know, I think it's premature to answer that question. I think that's something that people will think about probably for years to come. It sounded like what we knew publicly, there was attempts to have that conversation, and it was batted back and forth between the White House and Mr. Mueller. And, you know, without seeing A, the full report, and then B, the documentary evidence that underlies the full report, it's impossible to make that kind of determination. What I do know, not having worked with Mr. Mueller, is his reputation, again, is impeccable for being a hound dog on these things. So I think we can, as Americans, feel okay about the apolitical element of his part of this process, that he probably made these determinations based on the facts and the law. He called balls and strikes and is moving on. So we'll just have to make a determination later as to why, in his professional judgment, he decided not to go forward
with that. Okay, you've taken a very close look at this question. Are we going to see this report, and how much of it are we going to see? Particularly, I mean, there's obviously certain grand jury information, maybe counterintelligence information that's going to have to be redacted. But on this issue of obstruction of justice, do you think we're going to see this? We're going to get that whole narrative, the pro and the con?
I think eventually we will. What one piece of information that I think was new in this four-page letter was Mr. Barr coming out and saying, listen, I want to redact the report and release the full report. What the fight will be around the redactions. The redactions very well could be pages and pages and pages and pages where all the heart of it is not made public. And then that will go presumably to the federal courts to make a determination as to whether it needs to be made public. And I would say, again, as a matter of constitutional structure, if Congress has a prerogative to oversee the executive branch, make a determination as to whether someone belongs in office, different question than whether someone goes to jail, they should have access to the American taxpayers' hard-earned money going towards this investigation and the results of this investigation. The other piece on that is he indicated there might be information relating to other investigations, which I think is a signal that Mr. Trump is not fully vindicated and 100% out of water when it comes to legal jeopardy.
Well, I want to come back to that in just a little while. You know, oddly enough, one of the aspects of this report that has gotten less attention is that apparently a huge portion of the Mueller report documents the way and the methods in which the Russians interfered in the election in order to help Donald Trump. There's never much doubt about that, except, of course, you know, Trump himself has expressed doubt, has taken Vladimir Putin's word for it. But this report apparently in great detail goes through the fact, the uncontested fact, that the Russians did interfere. The Russians interfered in order to elect Donald Trump. We also know that Donald Trump's campaign welcomed much of this support. We don't know whether it made a difference, but that fell short of the standard of actual coordination.
Yes, coordination, which is a counterintelligence concept, or conspiracy, which is a legal concept. That doesn't mean it's not troubling. That doesn't mean it's not a problem. But I'm glad you raised this, because this the whole mantra of witch hunt, and now the White House is saying that you know people in Congress should resign, and that this has been unfair to Mr. Trump. The whole point of this investigation, Mr. Rosenstein's referral, was about investigating Russian interference in our core electoral process. This is what keeps us free, our ability to go to the ballot box and cast a meaningful vote that's actually legitimate. That is what protects our individual rights. And that's what Mr. Mueller was looking at. And I think every American, Republican, Democrat, in between, should support that process, should uphold what he's done, and should feel good that that system, that process is working. And the politicization of it is really, really sad in my view.
And I want to read a piece, at least an excerpt from a piece from Slate magazine about this. It was more critical of the summary of the Mueller report. And it, you know, talks about the fact that, you know, there was no coordination with, you know, Russia's government. And the argument is, well, you know, what about the coordination with other Russians? You know, Paul Manafort gave campaign polling data to Konstantin Kalimnik, Russian associate who'd been linked to Russian intelligence. But then there's it comes down to this question of an agreement, whether there was a tacit or express agreement. And he points out that we know that in June 2016, Donald Trump Jr. was told in an email that the Crown Prosecutor of Russia had offered to provide the Trump campaign with some official documents and information that would incriminate Hillary and would be very useful to your father. The email said the offer was very explicit, part of Russia and its government support of Mr. Trump. And as we know, Donald Trump then wrote back, if it's what you say, I love it. Mm-hmm. So apparently by the standards that they use in the Mueller investigation, this does not count as even tacit agreement on election interference.
Yeah. I mean, and you can even be an accomplice to that process, to a conspiracy. Mm. So even be one step removed, as we mentioned, I think the standard extremely high to put somebody in jail, especially with this level of public scrutiny. But I want to say a couple things about the Russian collusion / conspiracy. Yeah. The report makes clear, the summary, that there's two things that he talked about with respect to Russia. One was the hacking of the Hillary Clinton campaign and the DNC servers. The other was the social media misinformation campaign. And those two things trace conspiracy indictments that came out of the Mueller investigation in February and July of 2018. What is not discussed in there, which I think has been floating around as potentially more problematic, is the quid pro quo question of, hey, I'll give you Trump Tower Russia in exchange for lifting of sanctions. It's unclear to me from at least this summary of the report whether Mr. Mueller looked into that kind of coordination between the Trump campaign and Mr. Trump and Russia. And again, I don't have, of course, any information myself or drawn any conclusion, but that's a serious counterintelligence question. And I don't know. It's unclear if those two lines of inquiry are where he narrowed the investigation, which is consistent with the first prong of the referral, that is, investigate.
It's hard to imagine
election.
He did not, though.
It is hard to imagine he did not, but we don't know from the summary. We don't know if he went further and Mr. Barr just didn't include it in the summary or whether he didn't do it. Presumably, if he did do it, he didn't find any crimes. But I think that's something the American public needs to know.
The narrative will have details that obviously were not included in the Attorney General's letter and will, I think, make for awfully interesting reading. So there are a lot of unanswered questions. Now, you referred to this before. This is number one. So there's no collusion. There's no exoneration on the obstruction of justice, which is now very much still a live issue. And then, of course, there's all of the other legal jeopardy for the president. This does not bring an end to the Southern District of New York. It doesn't bring, you know, to the end any of the congressional investigations. What impact does the end of the Mueller investigation have on those other legal challenges the president faces?
I don't think it has any impact whatsoever, except that we have now Mr. Barr, who leads the Justice Department. So we have a new person at the helm that, as you mentioned, was appointed by the president. He's in the president's chain of command. He's not an elected official. He's not a member of Congress. And he doesn't have what protects federal judges from being politicized, which is they get life tenure. So it is a bit of a conflict of interest, but that's how the Justice Department functions. Mr. Barr will make determinations as to how far those additional investigations go. But this report itself, except for politically, might have an impact, but it's not going to legally affect, I don't think, the other investigations.
But the political impact, I think, is, you know, you need to consider this somewhat. You know that the president is in a very triumphalist mood, you know, claiming vindication, and that he and his supporters are now turning this against all critics, flaming the media for, you know, exaggerating or hyping this, but also using this as a tactic to discredit or deflect all of the other investigations. That this now, because there was no collusion, that this now will be used to discredit or minimize the seriousness of all the other investigations.
I mean, except that it's difficult to call those a witch hunt. I mean, that's that bread and butter, sort of DOJ process. Although, as you suggest, you know, at this point, a lot of this information.
Hold their beer. I mean, they can call anything a witch hunt.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's, yeah. I do think that people see this in black and white and, okay, so it means we're clean as a whistle. That's not what this means. I'm not saying that impeachment is appropriate at this point, but it's certainly on the table and it should be on the table because we want impeccable integrity at the upper echelons of our government, and particularly with that level of power, and we don't have it.
But so, much less likely, wouldn't you say, in a realistic basis,
sure,
that impeachment has become much, much less likely, even if Democrats conclude that in their judgment, the president did obstruct justice. The momentum of this, the politics, I mean, has really shifted in the president's favor, at least on this question.
Sure. And I mean, had Mr. Barr not stepped in and closed the obstruction of justice loop, there might have been more grounds for impeachment. Or certainly if Mr. Mueller had said he did obstruct justice, I think then there would be a stronger cry for impeachment. The bigger question, and I've said this and written this for a few months now, is the next election. What happens? Will the American people get access to this information prior to the next presidential election? And will they make determinations at the ballot booths for themselves who they want in office for the next 4 years based on this information? And arguably, constitutionally, that's how it should be resolved.
Yeah, there's no magic bullet here. They're going to have to do it the old-fashioned way. If they want to get rid of him, they're going to have to do it through the ballot box, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think there's an argument that who cares? Who cares if what he did didn't amount to a crime that would put him in jail? I think that's a pretty sad standard for our president.
So how did so many people, particularly in the media, particularly in the legal consultant profession, how did they get this so wrong?
You know, it's hard to know until we've seen the underlying evidence. Yeah. I think there was, where there's smoke, there's fire, and there might be a little fire still in terms of keeping someone like this in that position.
I've been thinking about this all weekend, and there was a lot of smoke. It's legitimate smoke, mm-hmm. and now we're being told, but there was no fire. And that still raises that big question mark.
There's no crimes, right? But, you know, we know Nixon, it was the cover-up, not the underlying crime.
Right.
And we live in a world where we're just become desensitized to the breaking of norms. So there's the question of breaking laws, and there's a question of breaking norms, norms of respect, norms of integrity, norms of decorum, honesty, respect for people across the aisle, all of those for the most part, or a large number, have been completely shattered. Yeah. And I think for a president, we want him back.
Again, it's always dangerous to kind of read the tea leaves, but when you think through all of the things that had already been revealed through the Mueller investigation, you know, over at Lawfare blog, I was part of this. We did the sort of the, you know, walking, talking indictment, we're going through all of the evidence that had been assembled and put on the public record. That really makes me wonder what kind of internal debate there was within the special counsel's office, that this may not have been a total slam dunk, because clearly there were indications that they were heading in certain directions, implying certain information was central to the special counsel's focus, and then basically say, yeah, we didn't find anything. Will we ever find out what would the internal discussions were?
That I'm not so sure. Unless
like 20 years from now, historians.
But I actually applaud the use of the term slam dunk. And I think that is the standard. That's a pretty high standard. We make all kinds of decisions in life. And if that's the standard, I'm not doing it unless it's a slam dunk. We all know we walk away sort of tempted to have gone forward, but realizing this, it's just too high. The risks are too high. And having been inside an investigation, the Whitewater investigation, it kind of functions not just like a prosecutorial office. These lawyers are acutely aware of the implications for democracy, the political implications. All of this stuff is on the table. It's a high-stakes chess game, and I don't think it's over. It's just no longer being played out in the Mueller probe.
Kim Whaley, thanks so much for coming in. I appreciate it. You're a contributor to The Bulwark. We're looking forward to your next contribution.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to The Bulwark Podcast. I'm Charlie Sykes. We'll be back tomorrow, and we'll do this all over again.